This is A State of Things. I'm Anita Rao, in for Frank Stacio. Many adults are happy to keep a safe distance from their adolescent years. The awkward body changes, acne, and first heartbreaks were more than enough to experience the first time around. But novelist Sarah Dessen feels differently. And she's actually become known for just how well she writes about young adult life. The North Carolina author has penned more than a dozen books that trace teenagers' perennial concerns. Her latest novel throws in a couple of new issues into the mix: addiction, class, and identity. The book is called The Rest of the Story, and it revolves around a 17-year-old named Emma Saylor. Sarah Dessen joins me now. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us about Emma Saylor and what she's up to when we meet her at the beginning of the novel.
Well, Emma has been raised by her dad in Lakeview, which is my sort of Chapel Hill-based town. So she lives in the middle of the state. Her mom died of an opioid addiction about 5 years before the book starts. So she didn't know her mom all that well. And as the book begins, her dad is getting remarried, and their plans sort of go askew, and she ends up having to go stay with her mom's family down at the lake for 3 weeks, and she hasn't seen any of them since she was four. So it's really about, I have a very big family on my mom's side, so it's kind of about what would it be like to discover a very big family when you were 16 years old as opposed to a child? And what does that mean for you that you have all these people out there that love you and know you that you don't know?
And so she's 17 when we meet her, and embarking on this kind of big transition in her family life. How did you come to decide to place her in this particular moment?
Well, I read the obituaries every day, and so does Emma Saylor. And the book really started with that, because I read the News and Observer every day, the obituaries. And I love it when the people in the obituaries are like elderly and have had lovely lives and, you know, everything is exactly as it should be. But a few years ago, younger people started showing up in the obituaries. And it was clear that something was going on. And that really made me start thinking about, you know, losing someone young as opposed to losing someone older. And also, I've written, you know, 14 books now about mothers and daughters. I've never had a deceased mother before. So this was I think this book is actually the first of my books that is more about the daughter than the mother. It's not about their two stories coming together as much. It's about Emma writing her own story by the end.
So the opioid crisis is definitely a part of this book, but it's in the backdrop a little bit. Tell me about that decision.
Well, I don't think I'm the person to write. You know, I think especially in YA right now, there's a very fine line where we want there to be more representation and we want there to be all these voices, but we want to make sure that they're authentic. So, you know, I think that it's very common and endemic in society right now. I just got back from book tour, and every bookstore where I mentioned this part of it, the opioid epidemic, whether I was in Canada or Texas or Nashville, there were at least three or four people that nodded, usually older people, sometimes mothers and grandmothers. But you can see that it's affecting people. So that was very important to me. But I also felt like I wasn't the one. I didn't want to write a whole book about that because I didn't think that was my place. But I think it's something that girls are going through. And that's what I've always tried to touch upon.
Let's have you read a little bit for us to get a sense of the book. So this is from the beginning and gives us a little bit of Emma and her mom's relationship.
Right. Okay. There weren't a lot of memories, especially good ones, but there was this. Tell me a story, I'd say, when it was bedtime, but I wasn't at all sleepy. Oh, honey, my mom would reply, I'm tired. She was always tired. That I did remember. Not a fairy tale, I'd say, because she always said no at first. A lake story. At this, she'd smile. A lake story? Well, that's different. That was when I knew I could lean back into my pillows, grabbing my stuffed giraffe George, and settle in. Once upon a time, she'd begin, there was a little girl who lived in a big lake that seemed like it went on forever. The trees around the edges had moss, and the water was cold and clear. This is when I would start to picture it, seeing the details. The little girl loved to swim, she loved her family, and she loved the creaky old house with the uneven floors and the little bedroom at the top of the stairs, which was all hers. In the winters, the water was cold, and so was the house. It felt like the world had left the lake all alone, and the girl would get sad. When the weather got warm again, though, the strangers and travelers came to visit from all over, and they brought boats with loud motors and floats of many colors and shapes and crowded the docks through the days and nights, their voices filling the air. And on those nights, the little girl would sit in her bedroom and look across the water and the big sky full of stars and know everything was going to be okay. I could see it all, the picture so vivid in my mind, I felt like I could have touched it. And I'd be getting sleepy, but never so much that I couldn't say what came next. How did she know? Because in the summers, the world came back to the lake, she'd reply. And that was when it felt like home.
North Carolina native Sarah Dessen reading from her latest young adult novel, The Rest of the Story. She's my guest now. So a lot of people have spoken about how well you write adolescent girls. How do you get into that mindset? Do you have a thought experiment, an exercise that you do?
I don't. I think it's – I have really tried in my books from the very beginning to stick to the more perennial issues of adolescence that I can relate to and remember. I mean, obviously, we did not – I'm ancient. You know, I graduated high school in 1988. I'm not embarrassed to say that. Okay, maybe a little embarrassed. But the world is very different. But there are certain things about the adolescent experience that have stayed the same. You know, the relationships with your parents, with your love interest, with your friends, work, school, you know, all these different things. So I think I try to stick with those things and not filter in a lot of slang and a lot of current events and a lot of, you know, eventually you, like, you can't write a book about teens today and not have them texting. You know, I realized that a couple of books ago, unless they're Amish teens, you know, they're going to be texting.
Right.
So there are certain things that you have to do to make it realistic. But for me, it's more about those sort of lingering things, like the thing that we as adults remember about high school. You know, it's not as much the nitty-gritty little details. It's the bigger issues. So that's what I'm writing towards.
How do you draw that line, though? Because to me, sometimes when I watch kind of portrayals of teenagehood, there's a new series on Hulu, Pen 15.
I love Pen 15.
And the thing about it that draws me in so much is the specificity, is the going on AIM, is right. The very particular phone that they're using to call their best friend. So it's a fine line, I would think.
I think it is. And I think that's also a visual medium. And when you're reading, I think in you can't probably be as vague as I am when you're on television and on screen. But in books, you know, the reader is creating the world themselves. So I think you have a little bit more freedom on the page. And I just think also, if you look at the lag, first of all, by the time I find out something's cool, like the teenagers are way over it, you know, and also by the time the book comes out, there's a lag time in publishing. So, you know, anything that was trendy when I wrote the book 2 years later when it comes out is probably not. So you really have to be careful about that kind of stuff because teenagers will call you out. They know.
Yeah.
And they know when people are writing stories for them that when they've just inserted – you know, a teen, quote unquote, instead of an adult. They can totally tell. That's why a lot of, you know, those books don't work because the teenagers are smart.
So you, one of the perennial things that you do talk about in this book is anxiety. And I love the way that you do it because it seems like it's very much of the perspective of someone who is 17. So she's not necessarily naming that she's anxious, but she's organizing all of her stuff multiple times when she's stressed out and she has very particular ways she likes to do things.
Right.
So talk about addressing anxiety through the eyes of a teenager.
Right. Well, I had a lot of anxiety in high school and in college. And I didn't go on medication and actually get help until after my daughter was born. So I try to be really open about that because I think you shouldn't wait until someone else is dependent upon you to be happy. You know, like, so I had a lot of anxiety. And that's how mine manifested. And also, I was really afraid to travel. I used to have a lot of anxiety about driving, which Emma Saylor does too. Now I'm a mom and I live out in the country. I drive all the time. So I'm kind of over that. But I had it. But again, I didn't want it to be the whole story. There's some great books out there about kids, you know, adolescents dealing with anxiety. But that wasn't her whole story for me. But I organized things when I – and so I could very much relate to that. And in high school, it was all about my schoolwork. Like, my life was a disaster, but my notebooks were perfect, you know. And so that – I think I can relate to that in a big way.
So there's a lot of grief that she also experiences, and I think you have a reading a bit about reflecting on her mom and some of their last moments together, if you want to share that
with
us. Yes,
this is from the last time Emma saw her mom, whose name was Waverly, and it was at Thanksgiving. Sailor girl, she said, because she always called me Sailor, not Emma. You know I love you, right? I nodded. I love you too, Mama. At this, she smiled. When I get settled, we'll do a sleepover, okay? Movies and popcorn. Just you and me. I nodded again. Bye, I called out as I turned, pulling the heavy glass lobby door open and stepping inside. Bye, baby, she replied. Then she slid her hands in her jacket pockets, taking a step back, and watched me walk to the elevator. She was still there when I got in and raised a hand in a final wave just before the door shut. Later, I try to imagine what happened after that, from her walking to her friend's car, then going back to her motel. I wanted to keep her safe and dreaming, and in my mind, even now, I slip and think of her that way. Like she's forever stayed there in that beat between nighttime and morning, when you feel like you only dozed off a minute, but it's really been hours. What really happened was that a couple of weeks later, my mom skipped her nightly meeting and went to a bar with some friends. She drank a few beers, met a guy, and went back to his house, where they pooled their money to buy some heroin to keep the party going. She'd overdosed twice before, each one resulting in another rehab stint and a clean start, not this time. Some nights when I couldn't sleep, I tried to picture this part of the story, too. I wanted to see her through to the end, especially in those early days when it didn't seem real or possible she was gone. But the settings were foreign and details unknown, so no matter how I envisioned those last weeks and hours, it was all imagination and conjecture. The last real thing I had was her standing on the sidewalk as I pushed the elevator button, her hand lifted. Goodbye.
That's Sarah Dessen reading from her latest young adult novel, The Rest of the Story. So this is the one of the first times you've addressed grief, you said. What stood out to you as you were kind of trying to imagine how grief feels for a 17-year-old?
Well, I have to say, I wrote a book called The Truth About Forever back in 2004, and the father passes away in that book. And I remember girls coming up to me and being so moved by the book and actually feeling a little like a fraud. You know, like when you write about something that you haven't been through and then people really, you know, emphasize with it and have a reaction to it, I would say, I'm sorry. You know, I almost wanted to apologize. So I think, again, as a writer, you're trying to walk that line between showing the world as it is, even if your world doesn't necessarily look that way. But then also, you know, being open. I think, you know, anytime you lose a parent, obviously, I have not gone through that. So it's so, but I think all of my other books, like I said, have been more about the daughter working through her issues with her parents. And this, there isn't an issue to go back. Like, she can't go back and work through the issues with her mom. So she's really got to work through her own issues. And I feel like that's why this book pivots in a way that maybe the others haven't.
You mentioned representation, and I know the YA world is just, you know, expanding at a rapid rate right
yes.
now. And there's all kinds of amazing new stories being told. How do you stay in your both stay in your own lane and make sure that the work that you're writing is representative?
Well, I think we have an LGBT character in this book. I don't want to give too much away, but it's the first time that I've approached it the way that I was approaching it, a teenager. So I wanted to be sure that we did it 100% correctly. So my editor and I worked very hard. And then we actually brought in a sensitivity reader. We brought in a woman who was a lesbian and read it for us and gave some notes. And you know, because I just wanted to be sure. And I've actually heard from girls already. The book came out, you know, a month ago. But one girl tweeted me and said, "You can't imagine how much it meant to me to see a lesbian character in your book. I've been waiting for this." And I said, "You know what? I understand. And it took me too long. And I'm sorry. And I'm going to do better from now on." So, I mean, I think it's a very, I think with readers in YA too, it's much more of a conversation in some ways than with adult readers. I mean, I don't necessarily feel like I want to reach out to an author when I read a book, but the girls do, and it's so special and amazing.
What's the most constructive piece of feedback you've gotten from a reader?
Wow. Gosh, feedback. Well, I brought in a whole character to my book, What Happened to Goodbye. I brought a character back. I had a character named Jason Talbot. He was in, he was in The Truth About Forever. He was in Along for the Ride, and he was kind of a jerk. And somebody one time was like, whatever happened to him? I bet he had an interesting life. And I thought, wow, you know, so I totally made him end up completely different. And everyone was very interested. Now people want a whole book about him. And I'm
wow.
like, I don't think I can write a whole book about Jason Talbot. But, you know, it was fun to go back. And so it's nice. They have questions. And every once in a while I can answer one. So
yeah, you're very much in conversation with them
yeah.
in real time.
Yeah.
So a few of your books are being optioned for a Netflix movie.
Yes.
Tell us about that and what is that process like?
It's crazy. So Netflix optioned Along for the Ride, Once and for All, and This Lullaby. And as far as I know, the plan is to make 3 standalone movies, but that the movies are going to overlap the way the books do. If you've read any of the books, you know there's some characters and settings and things that overlap. So it's been very tricky with the contracts, like of how we're going to bring in former books and different publishers. It's kind of a nightmare. I'm glad I'm not having to do all that. But the thing that's been great is that the woman that spearheaded this, Alyssa Rodriguez, at Screen Arcade, she was a fan in middle school and high school. She came to the meeting that I went to with her books. And I thought they couldn't be in better hands, at least. You know, you never know what's going to happen. I had a movie back in 2003, and it was a really fun experience. So I'm just eager to see what happens. You don't have any control as an author. I don't have any control over my books either, but at least I have the illusion that I have a little control.
Right.
So I'm trying to stay in my lane and like, oh, it's wonderful, yay. But right now the book is my focus because it has to be.
You have a daughter now. She's 11?
11.
Does she read your books?
She has read my first book. And she has read this book, the rest of the story, because I think she wanted to read it. But I think some of it went over her head, to be honest. I tried to give her the truth about Forever the other day, and everyone on Twitter got so excited. Because they're like, that's my favorite. She's going to love it. It's so great. And it was like this beautiful moment. And then she came down and she's like, I don't think I'm old enough to read this yet. And I was like, oh, okay. But she's smart, you know? And she's like, I think some of it's just going over my head. And I was like, all right, then.
Is there anything that you're worried about her seeing in the book? Because you're in there. You're in the characters.
Yeah. Well, I think my biggest concern is that when I was in high school, if my mother thought that she could write a book from the point of view of me and my friends, I would just be so angry and mortified. So what I've been telling people is that when my daughter hits high school, she's about to start middle school, I may step out of YA for a little while, you know, for just a few years and let her have that space and not be there, you know, and then maybe come back or do something else or who knows. But I can kind of see that your mom kind of acting like some expert on teenage girls would not sit well with me if I was a teenage girl. I love my mother, but, you know. So I think that would be the one thing, is that I may step aside a little bit. And I'm learning a lot of great middle grade books right now, too, which is awesome. I'm very well versed in books of all ages now, so it's good.
Do you think you'll write for adults at any point explicitly?
I have written several books, and they are in my closet, and nobody has liked them. That's sad. It's like I send them to my agent, and she's like, eh, no, this isn't your next book. But what I found when I try to write for adults is that when I do flashbacks to high school, it's the best part of the book. Like, and I immediately slip back into where I feel confident, and then I try to go back to writing about, you know, trying to get pregnant or working a regular job, and it's like, it's just flat.
Yeah.
It's not there. So, you know, maybe someday, though. I mean, it'd be nice to write about something past the age of 18 at some point. So we'll see.
We'll wait and see. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Sarah Jessen is the author of more than a dozen novels for teens. Her latest is The Rest of the Story, and you can find more about it and links at our website. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you. This was great.
You can also, at our website, sign up for a preview of our show. You get a daily newsletter. We'll send it to you every morning. You'll find out what's on deck and be able to tune in. The State of Things is produced by Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, Amanda Magnus, and Grant Hollab-Mormon. Robin Copley is the technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Anita Rao.